Delia IOX is supported. 1053 Main Street Gallery in Fleischmann's, designed as a space to support a vibrant and active artistic community nestled within the Catskill Mountains. 1053 Main Street Gallery is located in the historic, renovated Fleischmann's Telephone Building. Open Friday and Saturday from 11 to 5, Sunday from 12 to 4. And by appointment. Information about 1053 Main Street Gallery in Fleischmann's and upcoming exhibitions at 1053maingallery.com. MTC, Margaretville Telephone Company, locally operated and employee-owned. Providers of internet, TV, and phone service for both residential and business customers in the Central Catskills region. High-speed internet for transactions, streaming, remote work, and online education. More than 200 cable TV channels for local, regional, and national news and entertainment. And unlimited local and long-distance phone service. MTC, Margaretville Telephone Company, connecting our communities. More information at mtctelcom.com. Watershed Cafe, Roxbury's front porch on Main Street in the heart of Roxbury. For breakfast and lunch, all sorts of sandwiches, coffees, teas, juices, smoothies, and more. Eat inside, on the porch, or meals to go. Watershed Cafe, Main Street, Roxbury. Open every day at 7 a.m. WatershedRoxbury.com.
Hello, this is Rosina Montana, and I host Various Voices, alternate Thursday afternoons at 2. Right here on WIOX Roxbury Community Radio. We're live and local in New York's Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM, MTC Cable Channel 20, and WIOXRadio.org.
You are listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, 107.5 FM on the campus of SUNY Delhi and everywhere at WIOXradio.org. On computers or smartphones, this is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John, how's it going?
Going good, Ryan. What's going on?
I got my firewood pile into that keyhole slot, you know, where you can't wait till the winter to be over to stop burning. So I'm stacking on the side that was previously empty from, you know, using wood.
Yep.
And I got it as close as I can to the wood and, you know, got some oak, got some red oak.
Cool.
But I decided to get a little smarter this year and not just get red oak. Got some maple to mix in, you know.
Okay.
And I took last year's hemlocks that I left in the woods. I took the bark off for tanning and split those up for sapwood, right? Because the maple season's over, and that'll be next year's sapwood, hemlock. Hemlock's good sapwood. But, you know, you take the bark off of a tree, because I was using it for tanning, like I just said, And man, they really do season without the bark. I mean, they're noticeably lighter.
They're dry, huh?
Oh, yeah.
How'd they split?
You know, hemlock's okay. I'd say it's decent. It's not like spruce, like where it's unsplittable.
Right.
But no, it was fine.
Okay.
It was fine.
You do anything for the eclipse?
Yeah, we went to Fleischmann's, and the sun came out. During the eclipse in Fleischmann's, it was cloudy, and just during it, you could see it. You know, I don't know. It was all right.
Yeah, I felt the same. It was all right. Anything notable?
Yeah, my kids are running around, and they thought it was cool. It gets a little dark, and had to put a sweater on because it was getting cold.
Yeah, that's what I noticed. I thought it was, it got cooler than I really anticipated.
Yeah.
And the robins around me, they all started doing their evening chirps like they do right before dark. But that was about all I noticed. I was planting apple trees.
Yeah.
My St. Lawrence nursery order came, so I was like, oh, why not? I'll just go plant those trees during the eclipse and look up every now and then.
I got spoiled with the last one. We had that partial eclipse.
Yeah.
And just by coincidence, I happened to be doing some side work. I was up in a white pine, and it was the tallest tree I've ever taken down. So it was literally 110 feet, right? And never climb a tree usually that tall. And it happened to be right at the top, and you could hear the guy's neighbor's chicken starting to make their sounds to go back in the coop. And I was like, what the hell is going on, man? It's getting dark.
Yeah.
You know? And the chicken, I was like, oh, yeah. That's what they've been talking about on the radio all week.
Yeah, that was 2017. I forgot about that one, too. I was mowing a lawn, and all of a sudden it's getting, like, dark and cool. I'm like, where's the sun? I thought I had enough sunlight left to mow this lawn.
Yeah. So that was pretty neat. But that's about it. Just replacing wood. This is the last day of pruning for me. Apple trees have been at it since the 2nd of January. Mm. And my trees are at green tip, a little more than green tip. And some trees even here in Delaware County are green tip, but they're mostly silver tip.
My pears are very green, and some of them almost look like they're going to burst flowers soon.
All right.
My two pears in my yard.
Pink. Getting to pink?
They're just so much fatter than the other buds. I'm thinking they have to be flower buds. They're so swelled.
You're hoping.
I'm thinking.
You're hoping.
I am. It's got to happen this year. And if it does, I mean, barring this next, like, every day is going to be cloudy and dreary and rain. So who knows what the pollinators do. But I don't see freezing nights. So if they do flower,
God, I mean,
I'll say it.
You know, you're jinxing it. We're not into May. The frost last year happened in May.
I get that, but the flowers were prime then. You know? maybe it'll be early. I don't know.
I hope so. I hope you're right. Well, yeah, tonight we're talking about making maple syrup for the first time with Chip Beck. Is that true, Chip, that this is the first, or was last year? Do I have that wrong?
Last year was technically the first.
Oh, crap. You should have corrected me.
I would describe it as I did it, you know, for the first time for real this year.
Okay.
The first time, but last year was practice?
Well, I mean, I ended up with syrup last year, so I did syrup last year.
Yeah.
Or sugar. How do you say it?
Either or. Yeah.
I sugared and syrup last year.
It's interchangeable for me.
But this year, I really did it much bigger, so, yeah.
It depends what mood I'm in. Sometimes I consider myself a sugar maker. Sometimes I'm a syrup guy.
Sugar maker. Sugarer is not the easiest word to say, so.
I'm cool with making syrup a verb.
Yeah.
Yeah?
I don't know. It sounds fun. I syruped today.
I do say sugaring. Yeah. I do say sugaring.
You sugared?
Yeah. No.
That's what I mean. We'll make them verbs now, like something that's an activity.
We'll figure something out.
So, well, tell us about yourself before we get into the sugaring.
Sure. I grew up in Westchester County. I went to high school and college in New York City. So I basically was living in Brooklyn for the last 20 years or so. And I think, like many Brooklynites during the pandemic, I felt a great need to escape the city, and ended up doing that about 2 years ago and got a house up here in Ulster County. And, you know, every day is just figuring out new stuff. And that's been a lot of fun.
Where in Westchester?
Bronxville.
Where is that?
It's near Yonkers. Okay. Yeah.
Like, is that Mayopac area or no?
No. I don't think so.
I don't know.
Where's Mayopac?
That's the only thing I know.
Yeah.
It's like near Port Chester.
Do you say that on every podcast? Is how
if
far
you're
is
from
it
Westchester.
From Mayopac?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I have no idea. I've never heard of Mayopac.
All right. I used to play basketball down there.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, all right. Why did you get into maple sugaring now? Like, what are you, crazy?
Why? Yeah. That's a good question. I think, well, I mean, first of all, I, you know, spent the most money I ever have on an object, which is this house and this property. So seeing that I have a lot of maple trees, getting some of that money back feels like a big win, you know?
Right.
So anything I can get off the land tells me in my mind that I made the right decision coming out here. So
I guess why did you choose the spot where you bought? It won't say where, but like, you know, Ulster
yeah.
County, Shandaken area.
Yeah, I looked at a you know, number of places, and I'm, you know, a person who has generally a difficult time, you know, making decisions about any number of things. And thankfully, I saw this place, and it was just so much more magical than any other spot I looked at. I mean, first of all, it had a pond. I'm a hockey player, so, like, you know, imagining skating on that thing was pretty exciting. And, you know, it's got 48 acres of, well, 40 acres of wooded area on top of the 8 acres, like where the house nice. And lawn are. So, it just, I think it, the house is great, but also just like the potential of the property, was much greater than any other place I looked at.
No kidding.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, I've walked it a couple times with you now, and there's no doubt that you've got a lot of diverse woods up there, but the sugar bush is really nice.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, I didn't know the sugar bush existed until this season when we walked through it. I mean, last season, the first kind of mini run we had doing this, we tapped, you know, five trees that were all kind of close to the walking path, you know, so I was just like, we found enough quickly. So I really had no idea that there was, you know, a sugar bush until this year. And boy, is there.
When you were on the consultation with John or?
Yeah. To talk about that a little, I was, you know, introduced to CFA. Zane was the first person to come to my property. And, you know, at this point, I'm just like a new homeowner. I've never owned a property with woods and trees, and I think felt quite overwhelmed at that point. So I just, you know, I said, bring this guy over, I'll chat with him. And as we're chatting, we're walking through the woods, he's telling me about all these things, and then he says, like, oh, and, you know, here's a maple tree, and, you know, if you wanted to get into making maple syrup, you could do yada yada. And I immediately thought, oh, that sounds great. Like, how do I get going with that? And he says, you know, need to talk to John, you know. So John came out.
Not Ryan, I guess.
A month later.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Ryan, you know, you're, maybe you were very busy at the time. I don't know.
Yeah, let's go with that.
You're the only, you know, CFA field person who hasn't been to the property. So,
yeah, we'll get you out
soon.
I drive by there every day, twice.
Well,
it's all right.
I mean, stop by. Say hello.
I still don't. Yeah, I'm going to figure out where this place is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, it's around. Anyway, so I think at a certain point in my conversation with John, he said, well, we're, you know, starting up a backyard maple sugaring program at CFA. And so, you know, if you want to set that up, we can do that. And I did. And you and Zara came out, you know, a month later. It seems like every visit you guys just convince me to have another visit coming up, which I guess is great. because I get to meet a lot of people, get to learn a lot of new things, and I'm not like, you know, begging you to come to my property. So
now the goal isn't to try to sell you something.
I don't know. It sounds like
at all.
Is that what I'm making it sound like? No.
Everything we do. It's just like, oh, by the way, we also do that.
I actually was coming from the point of view of being like, I don't want to be the annoying city person who keeps emailing you saying, please come back to my property and help me with this.
That's like what we do, man.
I know it's your wheelhouse now, but I didn't know then. I didn't want to bother you.
That's what we do.
But last season.
So how'd you boil down? You said you tapped five trees then. What was your experience and what did you do?
That was last year.
That was last year. Tapped probably in mid-March. I think at the time you told me that Ryan was already done for the season at the time that I tapped.
He had been done for almost a month.
And, you know, of course I didn't know what that meant at that time, but my experience was, you know, we tapped and 2 days later it felt like I had 10, 12 gallons of sap, and I realized I got to build some kind of evaporator. So I, you know, got a bunch of cinder blocks and hotel pans and really just like sort of, you know, put this thing together in an hour or two in my backyard and just started boiling. And
Who's we?
Me. Yeah. The royal we. I say we because it feels like, you know, John and Zara were very much a part of my team at this point. You know,
we were like, there for emotional support via email a few times.
We tapped the trees, and I mean, I would have, you know, tapped a bunch of ash trees if you hadn't been there. So I did feel like it was a team effort.
Oh, absolutely, Mike Porter helped me out quite a bit when I first started. You know, it helps.
How long ago was that?
2008. That was 2008.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so that, you know,
I haven't progressed much since then.
Well, I mean, it feels like one of those hobbies where you just kind of refine the process, right? Make it a little better every year. I don't know. Is that your experience?
That is my experience.
Okay. After, you know, this first mini season, I was kind of hooked from the beginning. I think sitting out there you know, tending to this sap and, you know, both being active, but just sort of being engaged in a process that was simple and straightforward. It's, you know, I'm not like on my computer while I'm doing, I'm really sitting there, I'm chopping wood, I'm feeding the fire, I'm doing all of these things that just felt good, you know,
tangible.
In their own right.
It's tangible.
And then at the end of it, it's like you have a real product that is good and, you know, you're happy about. So just that process really made me want to do it much bigger this year.
Yeah. At what point, like, did you realize, I do like this a lot, you know? Yeah, because I remember for me when it was, but at what point do you think you're like, all right, this is pretty damn cool?
Well, I knew when I tapped the tree that it was cool. I mean, that you know, the fact that, you know, John told me, you know, sometimes he taps a tree just to drink the sap. Like, you know, knowing I could drink this delicious thing was almost good enough in itself. And then as I started to boil it and you start smelling that smell, you're like, oh my, wow. Like, I'm actually making syrup here. Like, this thing works like they said it would. So I think it's probably when I started smelling it where I was like, oh, this is something I'm going to get into.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
What was your moment, right?
Tapping tree for sure, but, you know, like that, seeing the transformation of the sap going into syrup is like, all right. And like you said, it doesn't taste lousy. In fact, it tastes great. And, you know, you look at the woods in a different way. It's just one more layer. Yeah, before then you're just like, yeah, some trees, but then now there's something sweet and sugary that's damn good.
It's quite magical. I mean, I think the experience, and it's like, it's kind of funny, but you know, I had a bunch of friends up to my property in the end of February, sort of a combination like birthday party and Maple weekend, and a bunch of my friends came up and I showed them how the evaporator worked, and you know, I was getting them to help me and doing all this stuff, and everybody fell in love with it. And you know, these are all, you know, mostly my friends are from the city and they all show up, and really the most common question is like how do you turn like sticky sap into syrup? And I had to explain that like sap is actually like a clear liquid like water. It's not what I think we typically associate with like hearing about tree sap. And so
like
I think
pine pitchy.
Exactly. So when I you know, showed my friends what the sap was, and you know, it was very exciting, and everyone wanted to just take buckets home of the sap, and you know, people were drinking it all night, and you know, that was actually, it was like they were super excited about the sap, and they hadn't even tasted the syrup yet.
Right.
So.
Yeah. That is something I hear a lot. I remember a guy came over when I was boiling in Margaretville at the time. He sticks his head in the bucket. You know, he already had a few drinks. And he's like, "Is that it?" I go, "Yeah." I said, "He's like, it's like water." I'm like, "Yeah, it's clear." I didn't know that. He just gets right in his truck and goes up the road. It's like, who the hell is that?
That's really great. I should also say that, you know, and I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but a lot of my friends who tasted the final product of syrup said, "This is the best syrup I've ever had," you know, and like that's the experience I had when I tried my own syrup for the first time after, you know, doing it right, which is, you know, relatively easy to do. You almost can't believe that you invest this time, you take this thing, you put it on a fire, it boils, and then like it is one of the best things you've ever tasted, or it's as good as any syrup you've ever had. Right. And I don't think we have many opportunities in this life to pick up a hobby that quickly and end up with a final product that is as good as the best you've ever had. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's something to that, you know, it's exciting.
Right. It's not like, you know, martial arts or woodworking or any of the, you know, 10,000 hour skill level kind of things to reach mastery, right?
Yeah. And I mean, I know that's not even the point. But it is, incredibly rewarding to pick up a hobby that is fun and interesting, and there's certainly lots to learn and certainly like ways you can grow and change and learn more about the process. But from the beginning, if you follow a couple directions, like you end up with syrup and it's delicious, and that's it. You can stop there.
It's just hard work. That's it. And
it's paying attention, you know?
Yeah. Paying attention, not losing track of time.
Which we'll get to when we talk about my suggestions for the first timer. It's like,
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is making maple syrup for the first time with Chip Beck. Okay, so you got some trees tapped.
So that was year one, right, in a nutshell? You kind of got the end of the season.
Yeah.
You got bit by the bug. So then what? You got to, you know, it's over quickly as soon as it started for you probably. It being mid-March in Ulster County.
Sure.
Then what?
At that point, I knew that I couldn't go through another season using hotel pans and cinder blocks. I couldn't get the boil strong enough. It worked. And again, the final product was great, but it took so long and it was like so much work and tending to the fire. At a certain point, I had my leaf blower literally pointed at the fire so it would like roar and get the boil going harder. But you know, I was boiling it, I don't know, two gallons an hour, it felt like. And that's when I was doing it well, you know. So when the fire was dying down, it's hours and hours and hours. And it's like, it's just, I knew that I loved it, and I knew that I needed to like scale up to the next thing. So it's getting a better evaporator is the first thing I started thinking about. I mean, Ryan, you actually mentioned to me when I first met you in the office, and you know, you said how did it go, and I said it went great, but you know, I got to get an evaporator, and you kind of shrugged your shoulders and you said, you know, just, you know, Bill Mason, you know, Bill Mason 2x3, 2x4, get it and be done with it.
Is that what you got?
That's what I got.
Oh,
I got a WF Mason 2x4 XL, which you know, is a sort of four channel divided pan. And it's, I mean, it's wonderful.
Built like a tank.
It's excellent. It's built like a tank.
That stainless steel he does is like, it's very thick. I'm not a metal guy, but it's like, I compare it to other people's pans and they feel flimsy.
Yes. I am also not a welder, but I can tell that like a lot of care and time and effort went into this. And that is a guy who doesn't, you know, really.
Did you meet him?
I didn't meet him, but I've corresponded with him a lot over email. And he's incredibly helpful and, you know, he's quick to respond. Like, I found that really dealing with him at every step of the process was wonderful. So, I mean, he has not paid me to say any of this. I highly recommend, if you're getting a, you know, evaporator, considering one from Bill Mason.
I met him. I met him halfway in Vermont.
Cool.
In Putney, Vermont, and or Brattleboro, doesn't matter. And he was from Maine. Nice guy, man. Very nice guy.
I mean, I haven't met him, haven't talked to him, but I think when you work with someone who you can tell takes their, you know, craft very seriously. I know definitively that if I need anything else, you know, related to this equipment, like, I'm going to him first. I have no reason to shop around or, you know, and obviously, like, his prices are good too. It's just, it's wonderful. Like, he's a great guy. And honestly, not agonizing over, you know, comparing eight different evaporators and the pros and cons and, you know, reading reviews like I and most people do again and again and again. For you to just say, like, you know, Bill Mason and be done with it was actually incredibly helpful.
Yeah, no, really good quality. I used to boil a lot more on mine, and with the acid to clean it up at the end of the year, the thing is like new. There's nothing wrong with it. There's not a blemish really on it.
I bet.
I mean, it's just crazy. So, yeah, not very happy with it myself. Yeah. But, okay, so you got a 2x4.
Got a 2x4.
And then now how many taps to feed that sucker?
55. 56 if you include the ash tree that I tapped accidentally.
Whoops.
So, yeah, you know, that's going to happen.
How'd you figure it out it was an ash?
I mean, I think when you look at the bark of an ash tree, it's pretty easy to tell that it's an ash tree.
I mean, when did it first occur? You're like, damn, this thing's not running.
I mean, I think when I was, after I tapped all 56 of the trees, I sort of went back before it started flowing just to, like, make sure everything was good. I installed, like, a vacuum gauge at some point in the line. I wanted to go check that out.
Oh, wow.
And then I just sort of reviewed. I mean, it's like a $5 thing.
Oh, yeah? I don't know. That's how
it's $7 little gauge you put on the line. There's it actually broke after a couple of days, so I don't recommend that particular one. But, I went up the line, and I'm just kind of looking at the taps, excited, seeing what's happening, you know, seeing them dripping. And then I get to one, and it's clear that it's not running. And I just kind of look back, and immediately I'm like, oh, it's an ash tree. So I pulled that one.
So you got tubing then?
I think that buckets, I think what we normally associate with, you know, collecting maple sap and sugaring, as they say. I did that last year, like I said, with the five trees, and the sap started flowing. There was snow on the ground, so I couldn't get my my ranger actually wouldn't go in the snow. So I was walking in and out a quarter of a mile collecting sap, two buckets each way, I actually got tennis elbow from it.
There you
which,
go.
So sap elbow.
I got tennis elbow.
I had never had that experience in my life, but arm.
I got golfer's elbow. Which side of the elbow is it on? Inside or outside?
That's a good question.
Golfer's elbow is the inside.
It's
Just so you know.
I played golf. I never had golfer's elbow.
Tennis is the outside.
I anyway. Think that's good. That's good to know. Thanks, Ryan.
Hey, I'm here to diagnose joint issues.
No, I like it.
Further rebranded from here on out as
Listen,
Sapper's
I have it
elbow.
Right now as we speak. So you know, it's what happens when you use a handsaw too much.
It's a syrup elbow.
Well, it's also funny that, you know, I think we all like to think that, like when we were, you know, 15, 20 years old, is like something hurts and you just wait a week and it doesn't hurt anymore. And this thing hurt for like, you know, a good 9 months. I was actually more surprised than anything. Like, oh, wow, like my arm still hurts.
Mine never stops.
Oh, great. I guess it's okay. So when I feel it, you
it'll
know,
dull down
back,
to a low roar, but never, it's always there.
Yeah, now it's just waiting. Now it's now it's
roar.
Now it's with you forever.
It is.
Until you die. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think that I would consider that more of a problem if I hadn't discovered this wonderful 3/16 tubing, which All is right. which is you know the point of my story.
Oh, sorry.
Couldn't carry, don't apologize. Couldn't carry buckets anymore. Wanted to scale up my operation, so again, I emailed John, asked him about tubing. He had a lot of experience setting up tubing in the woods. And yeah, essentially the sort of I'm on a slope. I think from the top tree to where I collect my sap is probably about 100-foot difference. So the sort of natural the change in elevation creates a natural gravity on this tubing. So you hook it up to the trees, and it effectively kind of draws the sap out of the tree. At least that was sort of my experience of it. And it's much nicer to wake up in the morning, get your coffee, go to your front porch and see how much sap you collected, instead of having to go to 50 trees in the woods and carry it all back. So, that definitely, made the sap collection part of it sort of like easy and simple. Then I only had to worry about, you know, the 400 other things you worry about when you're as into the hobby as I am.
Yeah.
So what'd you use for a collection tank at the bottom?
Yeah. So, I got, food grade, barrels. So, plastic, HDPE. So,
like a big 55 gallon drum kind of thing.
I got two 55 gallon drums. I got two 40 gallon drums and I, actually, the sap was really running well a couple of days, and it was filling up, and I panicked and went to the hardware store and got some food grade trash cans. So, you know, I really, it's literally, I would blink and there would be 100 gallons of sap there. So,
what was the most sap you got in one day, you think?
It's hard to say. I think at a certain point I was so stressed about boiling it down that I wasn't really paying close attention to how much was coming in. I just knew they were filling up. I'd say on a good day, probably I would say 100 gallons.
Yeah.
I mean, a couple of those things filled up.
Normal, gallons of tap on a good day.
It's like if I went 2 days without doing anything, all my stuff would be full, and I'd be like, I'd be in trouble. So,
over a 24-hour period, I usually tell people to plan on at least 2 gallons a tap on a big run.
Yeah, that felt about what I had.
So you can get 110 gallons, maybe. You could.
So after, I'm looking up the number, 322 gallons was my total capacity after I bought four more trash cans.
And you were at capacity at one point?
At capacity at one point.
Wow.
And then fortunately,
how'd that feel when you just know your boil rate, I'm sure, at that point. So you're like, I have this many hours.
Well, you know that feeling where you can't procrastinate anymore. You got a test tomorrow and it's, you know, 11 p.m. and you just have to start studying. That's very much the feeling I was having is I have no choice but to be out there. And when you have no choice, it makes it better. I mean, for me. Yeah. You're not worried about eating dinner. You're not worried about going to bed. Like when that stress really kicks up in this process for me, it's like I was like, maybe I just won't sleep tonight and that'll be okay.
I saved a lot of money. I was in my mid-20s when I started, and I saved a lot of money because I realized over the sugaring season, I didn't really leave my driveway for a month, except for to get sap. And I remember my friends next door who were up to no good. They're like, you want to go to the bar, man? I'm like, I can't. The sap is running.
Yeah.
The other guy who was doing sap was like, screw that sap. We're going to play darts. I'm like, sap, you can't do that, man. That's against the rules.
You can drink beer and whiskey in the driveway. You could just sit there. Why do you need that? I mean, I guess the darts are a major draw, but
it is
not
true.
For
but
me.
When you're getting drunk alone around the evaporator, I don't know.
Sure.
There's no one else around.
When you have sap flowing in, like, you know, who needs friends? You know?
Right.
I'm very much kidding. It tends to attract the flies, though. It's like all of a sudden people are showing up in your driveway.
I had one guy almost land in the evaporator one time. He was swaying. I was like, dude, don't hit the evaporator. Don't do it.
When I had my friends over, I was mostly concerned about their kids going near the stovepipe, which at varying points was literally bright red. But, you know, that was actually when I had my party at the end of February. It was quite cold. It was that cold spell. And it was nice to stand next to the stovepipe when you got a little chilly. Yeah.
All right. So, we'll take a break. We'll talk more about what do you want to talk about? The boiling process next or something?
I mean, you're the host. Tell me.
You're the guy.
What are my options?
I don't know. We'll talk about it. We're going to take a break. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest. Tonight's topic is making maple syrup for the first time with Chip Beck.
Time in today, and you're the most brightest star that lights my way. So come home to me now. It won't matter anyhow. I've got this feeling.
This feeling that today's the day. I've got this.
That's America. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is making maple syrup for the first time with Chip Beck. So
second time.
For the second time. Second time's better.
We need to change the title of
the second time.
Yeah. I know. The second time's better.
Yeah.
So what did you want to say?
generally in life, what we were just talking about?
Yeah, life. You know, like, what did the eclipse mean to you?
The eclipse was not very meaningful to me, although my girlfriend and I had a nice time being outside.
Yeah.
I mean, I actually enjoyed looking at everything but the eclipse, you know, the grass, the trees, the, you know, color change.
Right.
I mean, she and I are sort of both designers, so we were more fascinated by where all the color went in the grass. You know, it was almost like instantly just desaturated everything around us.
Did you guys have glasses?
We had glasses, yeah.
Did you take a peek?
Maybe accidentally.
I broke the law. You know.
It's, I mean,
I didn't have glasses. I don't know. Oh, I'll be honest. Whoa. I had sunglasses. I guess you're not good enough. It was just like
you didn't want to get your colander and, you know, see
It 200 just like mini when you little... stare at the welder when you don't have glasses either. It was the same.
I saw some photos on Instagram of little kids wearing welder's masks, and I was thinking that's probably not approved by whatever body needs to approve, like staring at the sun.
I don't know.
Yes, I had my
fifteen-month-old
daughter with me, so I was mainly focused on her crawling around in the grassy field.
Fair.
I was hardly looking.
Yeah, make sure she doesn't stare at the sun.
Making sure she... No, exactly. No, she wasn't, but I know. I had strict orders from Mom not to let her stare at the sun.
I was told to keep my dog inside, which I was like, absolutely. And then I realized, like, when is my dog ever going to look in
that's
the sky?
I heard you that know, suggestion, too. I was like, do dogs ever stare at the sun?
And my dog can do that at any moment, right? I mean, I guess the problem is you think it's safe and it's not, but my dog is sniffing down. That's my dog isn't.
True story.
Anyway, what were we talking about?
Sap.
Sap. Making maple syrup. I was just mentioning wood, which I think is obviously it's incredibly important to have enough to boil the amount of sap you have. And I would say about halfway to three quarters of the season through, I realized I was going to run out. I think I didn't really see myself making as much syrup as I ended up making. But just at that time, my neighbor had a dead ash tree that fell but was in pretty good shape. And I was able to go over there and chop that up and use it, and it burned great. I mean, split great, burned great. It was probably, you know, I forget how dry it was, like 20%, I think, something like it. It worked. So I was sort of relieved by that. That's saved me. But need more for next season. Got to start thinking about it.
What are you gonna use for next year? Species?
Well, I mean, so I've never in these, you know, 1.5 seasons, I've never really planned for it. So season one, I was using whatever like mixed hardwood I had around, just like trying to split it small. And this time around, I had a eastern hemlock that you know, that fell in the woods, and you know, I chopped up, and then this ash tree, and that's pretty much it. But John's pointed out a couple of aspen trees that I can target for next season, so I'll probably get those cut down soon.
We're going to hook you up with a guy with some white pine slabs.
Yeah. White pine slab guy sounds great.
White pine's gasoline.
Yeah.
You know, you mix it in with aspen.
Yeah.
Hemlock. It's damn good.
Yeah. That's got some sticky sap.
Yeah. But it burns, man. I mean, that's some serious fuel right there.
I bet.
That's what Bill Mason told me in his New Hampshire, Maine accent. Get yourself some white pine. You know, I was like, all right, well, I don't have any because I live in Margaretville at the time. And then when I moved to central Ulster County, there is white pine. But, Margaretville, like, they see a white pine, they're like, oh, wow, white pine. But there's not many of them.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know enough about pine trees to know exactly what kind of pine tree.
We can help with that if we can.
You've seen them. Do you know what kind of pine trees I have?
You have white pine.
Yeah.
All right, well, when John comes to your property.
Not Ryan.
Not me.
Yeah.
He can identify, you know. some trees.
My aforementioned neighbor, also around the same time that he gave me the ash tree, had two just absolutely gigantic pine trees fall on his property right across his driveway. And, you know, I'll probably ask him if I can
just make sure they're not spruce.
Okay.
They're almost impossible to split.
Yeah, you'll know if you have accepted spruce.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll ask for a little bit of it and then ask for more of it after.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, the spruce is terrible. Okay. Terrible split.
So you made 55 gallons, or excuse me, you tapped 55 trees. What was your production?
I ended up with 21.2 gallons of syrup.
Holy crap. Wow,
so just that is really good. Just a gallon per tap.
Which... Yeah,
I want
1.54 quarts per tap.
All right. So that's really good, man.
Yeah, everybody says quarts per tap, right? That's the thing.
No, they say gallons per tap.
Gallons per tap. Yeah. Well, you know, it shows how many seasons I've done this. One and a little bit.
You say quarts?
Well, people say a quart per tap is good. But
I mean, I've heard it on your show. This is where I'm basing this
information. When we break down the numbers, we usually do... You know, gallons per tap.
Yeah.
So we're at 0.4 or 0.5 or whatever.
So would you say you went to the bitter end?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think towards the end, I sent John an email, which is actually how this my appearance on the show got started. But we started a conversation in which I said, when do I stop? Like, how do I know when to stop?
And, I saw that email.
I think there are... you know, you go on the internet, you Facebook groups and when to stop, and everybody's got their own idea about it. I think for me, this is a learning process, and this is absolutely a learning season. I wanted to go until it tasted bad to me, until I really experienced like the clear signal, because I was smelling the sap. I was boiling a little bit of it on the stovetop. They said, you know, if it's buddy, the sap is buddy, it'll smell like old gym socks, you know, like all these things. And like, I never smelled any of that. Everything kind of smelled good to me. And then I boiled down, I finished a batch on my stove and I tasted it and I was like, it doesn't taste awful, but it clearly doesn't taste good. Like I won't feel bad throwing this down the drain, which
it'll
is what I had
start
to do.
Tasting more like what birch syrup is.
Yeah, metallic-y.
I always
say it's going to taste, when it's really bad, and you've gone to the end, it tastes like metal and it smells like wet dog when it's boiling.
Yeah.
It's got that kind of pungency.
So you know, especially if you're a dog owner.
Yeah. That's right.
Okay. I made birch syrup once, and it has hints of birch syrup in it.
Okay.
Birch syrup's for cooking. It's not for table.
And you do that if you just don't have maple trees? Like, why do birch?
Those poor people in Alaska, that's all they got, man.
Okay. We're talking about Alaska. I don't know anything.
Yeah, they got no maple. Imagine?
Okay.
It's like 200.
No. At this point, I can't.
One.
I mean,
200 to 1.
We had a big producer on last year, Mike Farrell. For big production, they can maximize that investment on evaporator because birch start running after the maples stop.
Okay.
So once you stop freezing, you got the operation going, might as well.
Okay.
Exactly. You got the investment, might as well maximize.
And they ROing that stuff?
Oh, yeah. Got to.
Yeah.
If it's for, you know, you're going to try to make money off it, you have to.
That is also, another thing that John, you kindly offered to let me use your reverse osmosis setup.
I built a little homemade one.
I decided at a certain point when we were going back and forth that I should just invest in my own. I wanted to get one that could really keep up with the operation I had, and because I'm boiling it, you know, sometimes 12, 15, gallons an hour. I wanted the RO to keep up. So I did invest in an RO that gave me about 12 and a half gallons.
Oh, you did build one?
Yeah, I ended up building one. So,
wow. And what was your experience with that?
I think once I really got everything up and running, you learn how a loose fitting is versus a tight, you know, like when things are going wrong, you know, they're there, it's obvious, you know, the thing kind of works or it doesn't work. And I had some trouble, like, actually lost like a gasket on my pre-filter, and like the thing wasn't running. I didn't know what to do. And I eventually saw the little ring sitting on my dining room table, and I was like, oh, like that's it. And then that actually worked. The experience was good. I think you need to, you need to sort of like still monitor everything the same. It's like, it's not going at the same exact rate that you're boiling. So I many times had my preheater, overflowing with sap coming from the RO because I wasn't paying attention, or it dropping down and then, you know, the level in my pan dropping because I didn't realize that it can't keep up with the boil I have going, like, those kind of things. But once I sort of like ironed those things out, and did things like, added like bypass valves on some of the things. So when I was like flushing the system, I didn't have to like remove all the fittings and, you know, mess with the settings on some of the needle valves. I mean, it's a little nerdy and probably not that interesting to most people who are listening, but I got into the RO. Cool.
What do you know what sugar content it boosted it to?
I think in, very much throughout the season, I was very concerned with like not scorching my pan. I was like spending a lot of time at the pan. And once I started boiling, I wasn't like measuring the sap content. I wasn't seeing what the RO was doing it to it in real time.
Yeah.
But I measured the, you know, first, I think the first sap run, I measured the sap at like 2.2%, something like that. And then halfway through the season, it dropped significantly. I mean, it was maybe 1.4 or 1.3 at a certain point, maybe not halfway through, but so the RO was doubling it. I mean, I was doing one pass most of the time. I started kind of fooling around with like doing multiple passes, but then, you know, as John's pointed out and as my research taught me, is like that sap goes bad quick.
When you put it through?
When you put it through the RO, like you can't let that sit around. So, especially if the weather's getting warmer. So I found myself in a couple situations where I was like, I couldn't really mess with the RO because I was afraid that the sap was going bad and I didn't have enough time.
I see.
But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, from my limited research, those homemade ROs pretty much max out at doubling your sugar content. Having the water is about what they're capable of doing. So it just depends on what you have for a day. If you have 2% sap, you're going to double it to 4%. Some do a little better, but not much.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the commercial ones, they'll get up to 12, 14, 18% quickly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
sounds great.
All right, so we only have about 5 minutes left on From the Forest. And if you're tuning in, you're talking about making maple syrup for the second time with Chip Beck. Chip, where do you want to leave off of on, like, what would be your advice to someone getting into it? And then what are you going to do next for next year?
Yeah, so I'll try and keep this short. I think my advice for anyone picking up this hobby is dip your toe in it. See if you like it. You know, bring the sap to syrup and see if that was a process that brought you joy. I think that's really the most important thing, because it's not, I imagine it's not for everyone. You got to sit outside a lot. You got to do the same thing kind of over and over and over for hours and hours. And I actually found that worked with my personality. I sit at a computer 10 hours a day. I was thrilled to be sitting outside doing the same thing over and over and over. And so that's my first suggestion. You can, in season two of doing it, if you know you like it, you can invest a little bit of money. It's very easy to do. I should also say, if you're trying to dip your toe into this, like it's almost free to do this if you have access to maple trees. Like, you know, you could really, you know, get syrup with, I don't know, $50. It feels like you could, and I mean, you could almost make enough syrup to get that $50 back.
Yeah.
But yeah, in the second season, then you go crazy like me and you know, overcommit and you know, probably make more mistakes, and but it's rewarding. I should also say, just generally, my advice is don't multitask. Like, you really, if you're going to set aside 5 or 6 hours in a day to do your boiling, set aside 10 or 11 hours instead and expect that you might miss dinner or not be able to put the kids to bed or, you know, whatever. You will spend more time doing this as you're learning than you think. That was at least my experience. Where am I going from here?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I mean, as excited as I am about, you know, the hobby, and I'm certainly going to do this again and again and again. I don't know that I want to tap that many more trees next year. I think I will probably do something similar. I will have a lot more wood ready and chopped. I think that was something that was frustrating, is like I kept running out of wood, and I'm like doing this work, and I'm also chopping wood simultaneously, and that wasn't fun.
A little faster, too.
Yeah.
Having drier wood.
Yeah, exactly. So, but no, I mean, in terms of equipment, again, Bill Mason set me up, and that's all I need now for a lot of years, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's just little things that, you know, over the years.
I should say, like, you know, we didn't really talk about bottling, which is, you know, sort of it's an art in itself. And I think for someone like me who doesn't like spilling syrup all over the kitchen and making, you know, 100 dishes to clean, like that was sort of a very much a learning experience. And I could probably improve that.
I got a question. How much over the boiling point of water did you go? There's so much like nuance there.
Yeah, I mean,
I used
the hydrometer. And so I pretty much am sticking to, I guess, what is like, you know, 7.5, right?
Okay.
I mean, I use the Murphy cup. Do you know what that is? It's the hydrometer with a built-in like bricks gauge. Yeah, it's a thermometer with a bricks like gauge on it. So it takes out a lot of the guesswork. So I mean, I really just followed that. I was too stressed about like messing something up that I just sort of played around. Although late in the season, based on things I've heard on this radio show, you know, I let the bricks go up maybe half, one more than usual to try that out, because I know that's what you like to do, right?
What did you think? Did it crystallize or just get thicker?
It has not crystallized.
Probably won't then.
It seems fine. I didn't go too much over, so, you know, I don't know, but I mean, the syrup's delicious.
I like it a little thicker.
Goes easier on the breakfast sandwich for sure.
Well, that's all the time we have. I'm from the forest, believe it or not. And if you missed the show, it's Making Maple Syrup for the second time with Chip Beck. And next week, I have no idea what we're doing. Is it the third week already?
Yeah, I believe so. So
it's Gary.
I'll just come back if, you know, we're talking about this.
I think Gary's come on to talk about them state trees again.
A third time.
Yeah, he already called Missouri and complained that it was not black walnut.
He called, huh?
They did, and they said they will consider it. Isn't that funny? Anyway, see you next week. Have a good one.
Good night, everyone.
Thanks.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing, and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes, and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd love
forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name, and then he heard the joy.